Now let's move on to the news of the week on our Reporters Roundtable. With us today, radio host Cynthia Pryor Hardy. Her talk show, On Point with Cynthia, airs from Columbia, South Carolina. Also with us is Aaron Aubrey Kaplan, a contributing editor at the Los Angeles Times op-ed section. Welcome to the both of you.
Thanks, very much, Tony.
All right, first up, FEMA. Earlier this year, news reports came out that several hundred trailers given to Hurricane Katrina victims had levels of formaldehyde up to five times over what is considered safe. Now, in anticipation of a slew of class action lawsuits, FEMA is asking for immunity from these cases. So an attorney for the possible plaintiff says FEMA should be held responsible for providing hurricane victims with substandard trailers. Some families, in fact, are still living in these trailers almost 3 years later. Aaron, should FEMA be held responsible?
Well, yes. I mean, somebody should. I mean, what else can happen to these Katrina victims, I swear? Talk about adding insults and literally injury to injury. This move on the part of FEMA to get immunity is kind of disturbing, and I just can't help but think about the recent FISA bill that gave immunity to telecommunications companies who participated in the warrantless wiretapping program. I just don't think any entity, particularly government entity, should get immunity. It's a run for cover that we've just seen over and over, mostly in the private sector, but now in the government sector as well. And I understand that the government said it had to act quickly, had to order all these trailers, an unprecedented number of trailers to house all these people. But, you know, it's kind of disturbing to think that there just were no safety checks on product that is known to use formaldehyde.
Well, you know, Cynthia, this is exactly what FEMA says, the argument that Aaron just made reference to, that they had to do something. It was a crisis. They had thousands of displaced victims. One FEMA official saying, quote, what was the alternative? What was it?
You're right, Tony, and I do agree with Aaron. But we also have to think about the fact that we do have to be mindful of appearances. These individuals were already viewed as mistreated, and so when, in fact, we are to do something to uplift them, and it turns out that we actually do something to disenfranchise them more, it is of no wonder why the blame belongs both on the government and on the manufacturers. Somebody certainly had a responsibility to make sure the disaster that was Katrina and Rita and the aftermath of it was just as disastrous, didn't really turn into a bonanza for people who had the goods and services that the victims needed. And it appears that that's exactly what happened. Now, I don't want to absolve individuals who live in the trailers from their responsibilities as well, opening windows and things like that to make sure that they don't get sick or get sicker. You know, but many of these individuals had no idea what was being put upon them. And we certainly can't blame the victim in this situation, especially when so much has been on them. So it's just a tragic situation all the way around. Certainly don't believe they should be absolved or given immunity for what has occurred.
Let me ask both of you one last question on this before we move on to topic number two, and that's this. What do you think should be done about the housing for the remaining displaced residents? Aaron?
Oh, that's a very good question, Tony. I don't know, but certainly not enough has been done. Of course, as we know, I don't know what the percentages of people who are there who have not returned, something like 50% at least. We have not really paid, you know, focused on this issue, and I'm afraid that as more time goes on, we're not going to focus on it, and New Orleans will just be rebuilt, and the issue of people getting back, you know, it will just go away. And most of those people are African American, and it's just really, really unfortunate. But we don't seem to have the political will. We kind of seem to want to bury this issue as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree with Aaron, especially since there seems to be so much blame going around. Most people want to just, you saw FEMA didn't even show up, you know,
right,
for the hearings, just because they just felt like, man, no more. But at the same time, I think that people have to be given all the information possible, and maybe they can make a decision. These trailers are trailers that are used for recreation. They're just not made for people to live in them
for
long
periods
of time.
All right, let's move on to our next topic. It's it's housing of a different nature. President Bush finally seems ready to sign a housing bill making its way through Congress. The bill approved by the House on Wednesday gives $300 billion to create more affordable mortgages for some troubled homeowners. Also, $4 billion for states and cities to repair foreclosed properties. And lastly, about $7,500 in tax credits for first-time home buyers. Before I bring you in to get your opinions about this bill and what effect you think it is going to have on repairing the housing crisis in this country, Aaron and Cynthia, let me tell you about this first. Yesterday, NPR's All Things Considered aired interviews of homeowners who are in danger of losing their homes. They were waiting in line for free financial counseling from a nonprofit agency in Washington. Let's listen to a few of their stories.
My name is Lisa Counts, and I live in Waldorf, Maryland. And we can't refinance now. Our home is not worth as much as it was when we purchased it. It's an older home. It was built in the 70s. We bought it because it had land. You know, it has like 1.87 acres. But we purchased it because we thought it would be a wonderful place for our children to grow up. So, you know, it's an investment to us, but also it means a lot because our children will be able to grow there, have somewhere that they can play outside.
Brandon Johnson. I'm an engineer. I'm a civil engineer. Living up in Marlboro, Maryland. Living in a house, of course, meant my ownership and my piece of, you know, the American dream. I put in heated floors. All new appliances, the latest and greatest of everything. Now my rates are astronomical. Dealing with trying to borrow from Peter to pay Paul to keep your utilities on and still trying to catch up back on the back payments of the mortgage has really been a strain.
Now we have to go to a break in about a minute, but before we do, Cynthia, these sound like professional middle-class men and women to me. Do you think there is a misperception out there about who this housing crisis is actually hitting?
Isn't that something? When people can remain faceless, you know, oftentimes the decisions are different than they are when faces are on them. I agree, yes. I don't think people recognize that these are middle-class individuals. It just runs the gamut, and they're just not going to be any winners. No one is going to actually be made whole, but I do think that the housing rescue bill is a good step forward so that people can begin to feel some relief. And gosh, some of these communities out there that are just becoming ghost towns can also, you know, have something to look forward to in terms of means of dealing with communities with so many abandoned properties.
We're going to talk a lot more about this after the break. Let me just remind our listeners that you are listening to NPR's News and Notes. This is Reporters Roundtable. I'm Tony Cox, sitting in for Farai Jadeh, who was in Chicago at the Unity Convention. Joining us are Cynthia Pryor Hardy, a radio host with On Point with Cynthia, which airs from Columbia, South Carolina. Also joining us, Aaron Aubrey Kaplan, a contributing editor at the Los Angeles Times op-ed section. Ladies, let me ask you just to sit tight for a second. We'll be back right after this break. Okay, we're back with Reporters Roundtable. I'm Tony Cox in for Farai Jadeh, talking with Cynthia Pryor Hardy and Aaron Aubrey Kaplan. We're talking about the congressional bill expected to be signed by the president next week once it gets through the Senate, which is also expected to happen over the weekend, to bail out the housing industry. Aaron, let me come to you because the president is now, as I said, expected to sign that legislation after having a change of heart. Why do you think he changed his mind?
I'm not sure. Maybe he didn't want to seem like the bad guy, the person standing in the way of relief, which people so desperately need. But what's interesting is that the Republicans in Congress are there's a lot of them opposed to this bill. I think relatively few of them supported it in the House. So the old line conservatives don't like it. They don't like the part, you know, the money going to the cities and states for relief. That seems to them like the government propping up business, and it is. And it's like Cynthia said, though, there are no winners here. And I worry about this. Of course, you know, we need relief. And African Americans, by the way, are suffering disproportionately from this crisis. There's a cover story in the July 14th issue of The Nation that talks about how this whole housing crisis has really started to undo the black middle class, which is frailer than the larger middle class. But I really wonder how are we going to pay for this? I mean, it's when you think of our debt, you think of the war going on and the economy really sinking. I really wonder this whole pattern of bailing out first the private sector and now the quasi private sector with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. It makes you wonder where the economy is going as a whole.
Well, they certainly have expressed their intention to increase the debt ceiling. But you talked about the Republican opposition,
yes.
And I want to bring Cynthia in on that because you're right. They claim that those who are in opposition to it, that this bill does too much to help the industry, not enough to help the consumer.
Right.
So here's my question, though, Cynthia. What about the homeowners who are paying their mortgages on time? Is this fair to them?
Well, you know, I think everybody has sympathy for people who are in trouble right now because we recognize a number of people who are in trouble, not all because of something that they did wrong. A number of people have been misled. And I think that overall, people who are in homes and looking at this happen to other people have empathy for those individuals. Is it fair? Probably not. Should people go into the situation understanding what they're signing? Probably. But did they? Probably not. You know, you see too many stories of people indicating, I didn't know this is what would be the result. I didn't understand what the arm was. I didn't know that, you know, when it was time for me to refinance it, my house would actually be worth less than what the loan value is. So there were so many complicated issues in there, and it appears that everybody was cashing in at the same time, which resulted in a system that pretty much bankrupted itself. I think that we should hold people responsible, which is why everyone, as I mentioned before, people are not going to be made whole, but it just seems right for there to be some wholesale relief. I agree with Aaron. I don't know where this $5 trillion, I don't know where this is going to come from. You know, all this money that's being spread around and, you know, we're stretched pretty thin as it is. I don't know where it's going to lead us to. But it is comforting to know that the administration is trying to help those individuals that are out there because there's just so many of them.
All right, one last thing. We've got about 4 minutes left in our segment today, and it deals with a case coming out of Louisiana where a young man was tasered by the police and died as a result of being tasered, I believe, a total of 9 times, if I'm reading this correctly. And it brings up the specter of Gina because, in fact, he is a relative of one of the participants in that, Michael Bell. I don't know. What's your reaction when you first hear this happening again? Would you say that, Aaron?
Yeah, I can top that, Tony. Right here in Inglewood, California, where I live, we've had 3 fatal shootings of 3 black male suspects in 2 months. So this is awfully familiar. It's way too familiar. And I believe in this case, the coroner looked. This happened in January, and the coroner just now came revealed that. He felt it was not what's his name, Baron Pikes, I believe, died under very questionable circumstances.
He called it a homicide.
Yes, he called it a homicide, it's getting close. I mean, the DA might file criminal charges, which would be highly unusual in a case like this. But unfortunately, this questionable police behavior towards black male suspects is something we're all intimately familiar with. This unfortunately surprises no one. We just keep kind of throwing up our hands about it, but we kind of take it on a case-by-case basis, and we don't seem to we've never been able to seem to address the whole pattern and practice of it. There have been police department reforms. LAPD is still going through that. Inglewood PD will very likely go through that, but you know, it just makes you it makes you almost numb.
Yeah, well, you know, this young man was handcuffed and on the ground, according to police, when the police tasered him the last couple of times, put him in the car, and in fact the coroner has suggested that he may have been, the last 2 times that he was tasered, it may have happened after he had already died. The question is whether or not the Officer Nugent, is going to be tried and what will happen. People are up in arms down in that part of the community. But to Aaron's point, Cynthia, it seems as if we do look at these things on a case-by-case basis, don't we? We have to.
Yes, we do. We do. You know, unfortunately, this is Louisiana, and it's very close to Gina, Louisiana. And when you hear the argument that a handcuffed man can only be so much of a threat, you know, that's... You understand that is the case. So it's hard to argue that the taser, the shots were necessary shots. And then the fact that the police seem to have kept secret the fact that the officer violated every procedure that they had on the books with regards to tasering. So it's very obvious that the officer caused the death. Now, where are we left and what do we do? And that's where the case by case comes in, and it's very difficult to maintain the public trust when you see this kind of situation occurring. They keep saying that he was tasered 9 times after the police arrested him on a cocaine charge. What should come right after that is the fact that he had no controlled substance
that was found.
System.
Yes, absolutely. I guess we're going to have to leave our conversation there, but we'll keep our eye on this story. Thank you very much, ladies, for being with us today. We have been speaking with Erin Aubrey Kaplan, contributing editor at the LA Times, and South Carolina talk radio host Cynthia Pryor Hardy of On Point with Cynthia. Thank you both again.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tony.